I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, where we offer you our complete and utter dependence. I am your host, Bob Mackey, and I'm choking on my own rage here. And this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today, as always?
Henry Gilbert, just washing my undies.
Who else?
Flesh Mother, Chris Antista.
And today's episode is Secrets of a Successful Marriage.
Just eat the damn oranges!
Double duty for Grandpa.
I think the opening sound should only be Grandpa.
Yeah,
now
I'll take it.
I prefer it.
What smells?
What smells?
And today's episode aired on May 19th, 1994. And as always, Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real world history.
I want her divorce, Bobby! Jodie Foster and Mel Gibson make for a new impossible romantic pairing in the big screen remake of Maverick. MTV's John Stewart is being eyed to replace Arsenio Hall, and Roseanne and Coach are the only shows that have what it takes to beat Terminator 2 in the television ratings.
Really? Oh, Terminator 2 was on the air in 1994.
Just 2 years after. That's
World Premiere Network event.
It's one of those things where they would save the premiere of a movie for the summer, mm-hmm. of just like, well... Well, instead of going to see this brand new movie, why don't you see 2 years ago's movie on TV for free without any of the blood?
It'd only take 3 hours to watch.
Yes. I mean, you joke now, but like, when was the last time? We just constantly wait for things to show up on Netflix. Mm. They do in less than 2 years, but...
Maverick is a fun movie, by the way.
It's fantastic.
Yeah,
it's really good. It does imply Jodie Foster fucked both Mel Gibson and James Garner.
Yeah, and that their penises are similar, as she would say.
In hindsight, it's real bizarre.
Yeah.
I have to bring this up. There's actually a great Duckman joke about Maverick where Ajax has Maverick action figures and they sort of play with them.
It's a good movie.
Yeah,
it's so fun.
It's fine. So today's episode is the season finale. Finale of season 5. It's an odd season finale for a reason. We'll get into that in the next episode of Talking Simpsons, but this was not the intended season finale.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fine episode, but I really wish it was sweet, sweet Seymour Skinner's badass song.
It's a really low-key, super grounded finale mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. no crazy Captain Wacky antics, just like a marital issue at the center mm-hmm. and Homer being estranged from Marge.
I think why I like this as a season finale is that if this was just any old episode, you would absolutely not think they'd be divorced. But this was at the time of event
right.
season finales are starting up. Like, Mad About You would be like, well, is this? Mm. Are they getting a divorce this season finale? The Friends would do that, too. It was getting popular, so it at least added more gravitas to this story.
That is undercut at the end of the episode when it's revealed over how long this has taken place.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're right. In hindsight... We all did. We talked about it in the One Fish, Two Fish mm-hmm. that we thought, yeah, they might kill the lead character. The show's doing a bunch of stuff that mm-hmm. TV
yeah.
hasn't done before.
And I thought of this episode a lot, actually, during the season finale of The Sopranos, mm-hmm. where it looked like Tony and Carmelo were going to be divorced forever. And
you'll get nothing.
Yeah. One of the best powerful moments in the entire series of Sopranos when he's arguing with Carm and he is about to punch her and instead he punches through the wall. It's like, it's terrifying. I'm just like,
she doesn't flinch though.
Yeah.
Love that show.
It's so great. Both of those actors, they should earn some awards and some accolades for being so good in The Sopranos.
I still want to remind people that James Gandolfini's dead. This is all you get of me. Go watch The Sopranos. It's really good.
He's at the big Olive Garden in heaven. Or hell. Who knows?
I'm going to say heaven.
Yes. I want to talk about two other things. Sorry, Henry.
Yes.
Greg Daniels, his first credited episode.
Oh, shit.
Please continue. What else has he done?
Well, Greg Daniels would go on. He would work on this season 6, and some of season 7 of The Simpsons before co-creating King of the Hill with Mike Judge. And then he would graduate from that into adapting The Office for America.
Yeah.
And now he is just like a lord of television production. Yeah. But this was his last non-executive producer job.
Wow.
He had been a longtime writer. Actually, he wrote the Homer and Apu episode, too.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. I forgot about that.
This one I do love and want to bring up Greg Daniels for, because if you change 10% of this episode, it is a King of the Hill episode.
You're right.
It is
very similar.
Like, Homer living in that treehouse, Bill Dotrieve would be doing that exact same thing.
Oh my god, I made the connection just now. Mo is Bill Dotrieve in this episode.
Oh yes.
Pining after Marge, being afraid of Homer, and having a secret lust for Marge.
And the scene of Milhouse and Bart coming upon Homer in the treehouse and getting scared. You can put Joseph and Bobby in that scene, and it is the same scene. Uh-huh. It would be, they would react the same way. So
stubborn crash danger.
So I see a lot of King of the Hill in this episode, and it's low stakes, very little Captain Wacky stuff, and just about, you know, domestic strife that comes from a real world situation.
But a fairly typical sitcom premise.
Oh, yes.
And
yeah.
Which I don't bash anymore because I've been a podcasting officially for 10 years. And my first year with a girlfriend, we went through this exact thing. Mm. Someone on Twitter said I revealed something that was private. And I was like, this is too cliched an argument to have. I'm not doing it or giving into your point, and things got way worse. And that's the only reason I won't bash it as cliche. This shit happened to me.
It's probably easy for professional comedy writers who have put their real life into stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Why are you making fun of us, Uncle Joey?
Well, Louis C.K. had tons of jokes about that. He joked about how he joked about his wife when they were married, and then after the divorce, he mentioned that one of her problems was of just like, you're just going to joke about this.
Yeah.
Like, you're just, or there's an episode of Dream On that's really funny too, where he's dating a comedian who would play Chandler Bing's regular girlfriend on the old show. But anyway, this episode though is hard for me to watch too, just of how it shows the dysfunctional relationship between your parents, and that's hard. It gets me in a certain way, and also I'll go into it more, but I really feel that Homer's redemption is slightly unearned.
I think it just underlines how bad the marriage is. But so we have to give one final tip of the hat to Carlos Baeza. This is his last Simpsons episode. He started with Lisa's Pony, and he directed the following episodes: Radio Bart, Bart the Lover,
Damn.
Treehouse of Horror 3, Selma's Choice, The Last Temptation of Homer, and Deep Space Homer.
These are all some of my favorites.
Yeah, one of the best directors, the most unsung directors of The Simpsons, and this episode looks great despite how down-to-earth it is, and Homer's not in space anymore. He's in the classroom, but still great work by Baeza.
Yeah, and it's so unfortunate that he is never on any of the commentaries, because I believe he not just left L.A., but left America.
I think he went back to Cuba.
Yeah, so he's not reachable, but I'd love to hear his side of it. Like, yeah, he is really underrated as a person. I think he was really good with action.
A certain look to his characters that I can't describe with words, but I could tell if it's one of his scenes or one of his episodes. There's just like a certain roundedness, a certain look to the faces. I miss Carlos, and please come back.
It's easy to come back from Cuba, isn't it?
They love us.
So the episode starts, this is kind of a long clip, but it's because the slow pace of it is what's so funny. This would totally be in King of the Hill of the friends playing poker together and poker nights.
I love it.
Don't try to eat these so-called chips.
Do you want another card or not?
Huh? Oh, okay, I'll take three.
Don't!
Woohoo!
I'm in. Let's see your cards.
Oh, I was bluffing.
Come to Papa! Wait a minute. You have a straight flush, Homer. Go! You do this every time! God! Choking on my own rage here!
Hey, don't yell at Homer. Just because he's a little slow.
Something was said. Not good. What was it?
Don't yell at Homer!
No, that's okay. What was it?
Slow! They called you slow! How dare you call me that!
Hey, Homer, you still here? Boy, you are slow.
Something said, not good.
Get the hell out of here!
And just to make it seem more like a traditional sitcom, this is like one of the only minute-long scenes in The Simpsons, even though it takes place over several hours.
It's a nice nighttime scene lit really well. Yeah. There's shadows on all the characters' faces, because when it's happening, you can definitely tell it's a joint.
Mm-hmm. And I'm holding out for a car hole reference that never comes.
Car hole.
Well, this did upgrade Mo to after-hours hangout for Homer. Mm-hmm. Like, normally it was just, he'd only see him at the bar. Like, Mo was rarely seen outside the bar, and I even forgot Barney was in the scene because he just passes out immediately. And I'm out. Something was said. Not good. Like that Homer's that slow, and that they just all walked away. Was it more like Homer was just blacking out while thinking on that?
It's another one of those things where a character has an inner monologue or a character is daydreaming, but things are happening in real time, and they cut back to what happens after the character experiences that, and no one is there, or people are looking at him funny.
It's a very season 5 thing, and that is also how I play poker. Well, the few times I've ever played poker with friends, of just like, I accidentally win, or I'm just like, somebody has to tell me, no, that's a good combination. Like, oh, I thought those numbers didn't mean.
This is infuriating.
I know. Well, I play.
Everything you learn about poker is to force namby-pambies like you out, so you can't limp in, as they say, with something that wins in the last card.
But see, I'm too stupid to know. I was too stupid in poker to know how to do it. That was one of my favorite times, was playing against a guy who was like, seriously, he just read like 5 poker books, and he'd watched too many of those like poker competitions. And so he's like, well, I'm just going to edge here and do this. So I was like, this is so boring to play poker this way when there's no money. Like, just have fun with poker. Must it be a machine all the time with you guys? And, this also showed us the inside of Lenny's house before we see the... please don't tell anyone how I live.
Yeah,
from season 8.
I think it could have been a different house. I don't know if they kept this consistent, but we saw that in Shape Up Stupid in Marge on the Lamb when Homer calls Lenny.
That's true. Now Lenny's single. I guess that girl, that woman is gone from his life. I also like the Lenny. There's no reason Lenny should have a nightcap on. Yeah, he does.
It's cute.
When he tells Homer to leave, like, he just sleeps with a nightcap on.
I think it's to signify how much later it's gotten in the night. Like, Lenny's in his sleeping gear.
He changed into his sleeping gear, put on his nightcap, and is now getting a drink, and still Homer's just there, just trapped. And then when Homer's trying to ask the whole family, like, I'm not slow, right? Mm-hmm. I like that even Bart is trying
very
to be
sweet.
Nice of just like,
very sweet.
In other episodes,
you're not slow, you're my dad.
Exactly. In other episodes, Bart would have just been like, you're the stupidest idiot ever. And then Homer would strangle him, but they were all trying to save his emotions. Then the way Marge also tells him, like, well, it's not like you read books. Like, she's she's trying not to hurt Homer's feelings, but also not lie to him, like, completely.
We're giving him a path to become smart. It's like, well, there are things you can do if you want to not be called slow, Homer.
It's nice Marge being supportive, you know, and that felt like such a TV writer thing of Homer screaming about, like, these TV shows are just, they're all too great. I can never turn away.
If only they stumbled once, just 30 minutes to ourselves. Yes.
But then Homer comes to grips with how unlearned he is.
I am slow.
Oh, homie. If you feel so bad about yourself, there's always things you can do to feel better.
Take another bath in malt liquor?
There's that. Or you could take an adult education course.
Oh, and how is education supposed to make me feel smarter? Besides, every time I learn something new, it pushes some old stuff out of my brain. Remember when I took that home winemaking course and I forgot how to drive?
That's because you were drunk.
And how?
He knew the entire time. Also, taking a bath in malt liquor does not sound fun unless you're butt-chugging the entire tub or something.
I mean, just soaking it in through your skin. Even
would that get you drunk?
Like,
absorbing alcohol through your skin?
So.
Got the idea. It couldn't have been 2 alcoholic jokes in a row. This is some kind of home remedy for an alien skunk?
I think it is just... These 30 seconds, like, Homer has a major drinking problem for these jokes to work. It's just crazy. And then Marge, when the whole episode is about their marriage, this is Marge just completely excusing, like, you know, don't do that. Instead of saying, like, Homer, you have a total alcohol problem here.
She's tiptoeing around a lot of issues so far in these first 5 minutes.
Yeah. And then Homer arrives at the adult education place, and we get a few pretty good jokes. I like the... Selma and Patty and Selma trying to tell people how to get a man when, like, Patty isn't even into it. Like, she doesn't. I guess she's doing it to support Selma, I suppose.
And we have the funk dancing for self-defense. You just give him one of these.
It's important everybody know where that's from. I see that used in so many Simpsons shit posts and memes.
Yeah, and like, the most famous one that I remember from months ago is the Persona 5 one.
Yes, yeah,
it's so great.
If you don't play video games, Persona 5 was this brand new one. RPG, I loved it, but Japanese, so combining it with a Simpsons reference makes it even better. And so they put on the
you'll never see
menu over Mo, and then when he's dancing, they're playing You Never See It Coming, and they actually time it that the 3 gunshots hit with the beat of the song.
And in the turn-based battles of Persona 5, you do have a gun attack.
Have a gun. Yes. Somebody has a shotgun.
It makes sense.
It's perfect. It's perfect.
Say some gangster is dissing your fly girl. You just give him one of these.
You never see it come back.
Ugh, then the chewing tobacco room. Like, my dad chewed tobacco when I was a kid, and it disgusts me. It disgusts me to this day, and this scene is disgusting.
I think they made it that way on purpose, because, like, they just show Lenny and Carl smoking, so they're not unglamorizing tobacco necessarily. So this is just a hatred of chew. I'm from the South. I tried it briefly during my redneck phase. It got you super buzzed. If you swallowed even a bit of it, you'd want to throw up.
Disgusting.
I've been witness to the chaw cup, a Dixie cup with a napkin in it. You put the napkin in so people know that's not your drink.
Oh, no one was courteous enough to do that at my high school.
Wow,
there were incidents of people drinking someone's chaw glass if you're drinking rum and coke. Yeah, right? It's bad.
Stop.
Look at that.
So I will not tell any stories like that, Henry, but...
but that's the scene is so gross. It's like dripping out of their mouths with the loudest chewing ever.
It's really disgusting.
That I then drank, Henry.
There was a... in high school, there was a brief fascination with chewing because you can, you know, absorb tobacco without teachers knowing secretly. But there was a strange, like, subculture of, like, you could turn that into a spitter. You can turn that into a spitter.
Oh,
just
my
like,
God, you're right.
Where you left your tobacco leavings was called a spitter. It's like, yes, any container is a spitter. Let's get on with our lives.
The whole planet is a spitter. Record. Move.
Yes. Yeah. No, my dad finally quit it in my like early teens. Mm-hmm. But then he was just like occasional cigar guy, which was really
like...
Is he
a red man, man?
No, he just likes fancy cigars. And so he'll just like... Basically, it started as like, oh, I guess he just has one cigar a day. And then it turned into like, well, I'm just going to get a couple puffs. Like, you smoke. Like, if these were cigarettes, you'd be smoking a pack a day.
It's like five cigarettes at once.
Though, obviously, cigars aren't as bad for you as cigarettes, I am told, I guess.
No, they're much worse for you, but it's kind of impossible to... People who form habits out of cigars are, like, pretty much just gangsters. Like, you can't smoke a whole cigar in one sitting. And if you can... You got huge problems.
That's a lot of stuff to burn through.
It is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Pinocchio smokes it down.
That's true.
All the time, man.
Him and Lampwick. That guy was a bad influence. I never cared for him. I'm glad he's a donkey.
As disgusting as the chewing tobacco scenes are, I do like how the empty-headed chewing and staring they do at Lenny is so funny. There's like...
All the sounds of people, but the wet smacking.
Grew up in the South, and you can remember that fucking smell. It's it makes me sick, not Henry sick, but I hate it.
It's the worst form of eating tobacco.
But after watching Lenny teach a class, Homer has a realization.
If he can teach a class, he can teach a class. I mean, I can teach a class.
What is your area of expertise?
Well, I can tell the difference between butter and I can't believe it's not butter.
No, you can't, Mr. Simpson. No one can.
Oh, I failed again. Everybody can teach a class but me. I'm an idiot. What am I going to tell my wife and kids?
Oh, you're married?
That depends. Is there another way to get this job?
No, Mr. Simpson. What I mean is we may have a job for you after all. We need someone to teach a course on how to build a successful marriage.
I'll do it. Anything to get me out of that house, away from all that nagging and noise of a family of love. Sha-la-la-la.
Okay, so...
You want to do that reference first?
So let's do the reference first. That's the reference to the Family Ties song, and I have it... Actually, the clip is queued up to the exact part Homer sings. What would we do, baby, without
us? Sha-la-la-la. So...
What'll we do, baby, without us?
I'm so glad you got that because I was pretty sure it was from Family Ties, but it's only from a specific season or two. They changed the theme song a little bit.
I mean, the theme song changes, but they always have the sha-na-na-na.
They took it out for like the seventh, and it's not in the first.
Seven seasons.
Yeah, I know.
Dear God.
I know. And you can also only have Marty McFly for so long.
Also in the scene, I believe, based on how it's animated, none of the lines they're saying are the original lines. It is the most 80-yard scene in season 5, probably.
Well, the middle part where Homer solicits the dean, that animation, I think, was the same.
That was dead on.
And I love that Homer would... he's like, Homer would have had sex with him to get that position. But, yes, the I can't believe it's not butter... That's kind of a really cliched 90s sitcom joke. I don't love it.
I mean, they even changed Lionel Hutz's law firm from I Can't Believe It's a Law Firm to something else, like Lionel Hutz Shoe Repair.
Being the chief editor of Simpsons Foods totally exists. And it's just margarine.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. It's sort of like if I had milk and like called it I Can't Believe It's Not Water.
I guess the campaign for it at the time was... No margarine tastes like butter. Yeah. Not really. This
margarine's
one
more healthy for you. They're all bad for you. Mm-hmm. Unless you're a baby calf, this is going to be bad.
One's oil, one's butter. It's either way, it's bad, and I love it.
Moderation is key, folks. I forgot about this that I went to an adult education facility, and none of this resonates because I went as a student. It's where you go to get a GED or when you're kicked out of a bunch of schools.
I see.
But it's a very weird classroom setting of people. within 10 years of my age, being around 18 at that point, just all over the place. People trying to get their GED. People have been in jail. People have been kicked out of schools. That was me.
I've considered doing... I mean, the closest thing to do it, I did do two semesters of Japanese class at basically one of these things, but at a place in San Francisco that only teaches Japanese. It's a job. Soko Gakuen.
I think my girlfriend is even taking a swim class from one of these programs. Yeah.
It's an easy way to enrich yourself, and it's nice too to go to classes and not have to. In my mind, I was just thinking like, "Oh God, is this the right credits?" This is not credits or nothing. It's just to experience.
You have to pay by the class, or it's completely free, and it's like $100 a class.
And Homer's brain all the time is every sitcom theme or whatever, so it's easy for him to just pull from it.
I checked Growing Pains first. I did. I'll admit it. Thought it might have been Growing Pains.
A much less 70s theme song than Growing Pains.
That's you got Alan Thicke to thank for that.
Yeah.
And then Homer gets the job, and he is so proud of himself. I love this line.
Look, everyone. Now that I'm a teacher, I've sewed patches on my elbows.
Homer, that's supposed to be leather patches on a tweed blazer, not the other way around. You've ruined a perfectly good jacket.
Incorrect, Marge. Two perfectly good jackets.
I love the structure of that joke because I get it, and I don't get it at all. I don't understand the reference. I've never seen a human being with that look.
The old professorial look was having leather patches on your elbows.
Why?
Because you rest on your elbows a lot, and you're putting less pressure on your elbows than just right through the tweed.
But everybody with a desk job is doing that.
Well, it's also an implication of that you don't have the money to own more suits. So it's just like, well, these professors, they don't make a ton of money. They got to make their suit last a long time. So they make their busiest joint where it would wear, their tweed suit would wear out.
I still think it's based on an ancient stereotype that nobody under 20 would get now.
I mean, I'm sure it happens in the paper chase, but not afterwards.
Yeah. No, I've never...
That I got.
Thank you.
I don't think I ever had a teacher with leather elbow patches.
No.
But yes, in any sitcom back then, they'd all have leather elbow patches. It would be a guy with balding hair and a ponytail, just like, well, class, what did Hawthorne mean here?
Yeah, it's sort of like the signifier for a nerd would be the pocket protector and the thick glasses. That's a signifier for a professor, the leather patches on the tweed jacket. But what annoys me is that the next scene when Homer leaves, he's got a proper blazer on. He didn't wear the leather jacket with the tweed patches to his class.
Well, and then he would get, but he does have the elbow patches on that new suit.
They're
so
the
I guess,
proper patches. Marge made him change or something?
I would guess if this episode is about the codependency of their relationship, Marge simply just made him a new suit. She's like, I'll fix it.
She's a seamstress, you're right.
Yeah, so she probably just made it correctly for him, but then Homer... Out of all places to get tweed, Homer cut it out of the back of his jacket. Not even the elbows off of another tweed jacket. He's like, no, for the tail. Like,
he did a bad job of cutting if you look at the tatters it's in.
And Lisa confusing Homer with a question. That was such like a season 2 joke there.
Yeah,
just like
Stampy's an elephant.
Dad, he's a teacher.
Yeah.
And did you notice Ned is wearing a weird outfit when Homer knocks on his door?
Oh, I forgot about that.
He never, I guess it's like his loungewear outfit, but I've never seen him wear that since.
Yeah, Homer is going to tell everyone he's a teacher. He's so proud of himself. He tells Flanders. He tells the Krusty Burger order box. It's a felony to tease the order box.
And then him brushing through the red light. And I like that it was Hoover who's like, I didn't know we could do that.
Yeah,
and
she does. Great.
Like, Hoover never gets to have jokes like that. It was nice for her. I think they probably just did it because they're like, well, Edna's going to be in his class, so we can't have Karabopple do it either. And Skinner wouldn't do it, so... Who's the third character from the school who'd have a car? I guess it's Hoover.
So the one thing about Homer's class, it's called the title of the episode, Secrets to a Successful Marriage. There aren't enough married people in Springfield. So most of the people in the class are single or unmarried. And they kind of invent a wife for Carl who has one line, but we don't know
her
name.
That's true. Yeah, I forgot that. That definitely she does not exist. So she doesn't say I'm married to you or anything. It's just implied that they are.
Let's assume Carl is his last name, so it's Mrs. Carl.
His real name is Carl Carlson.
Carlson.
Yes. But you're right. It's more divorced people. Mm-hmm. It's really about the class. Instead of being for married couples, the class is for people who are not who have failed at marriage or haven't got a marriage yet.
They need to go to Patty and Selma's class then.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, only the women, it's about how to catch a man.
Well,
I
Skinner
guess,
could be a homosexual.
And Smithers, too.
Like, and how.
But so, yes, this is Homer is not a very good teacher.
How about if we tell you our problems with relationships?
Yeah. That'll eat up some time. How about you, Otto?
My standards are just too high, you know? I feel like nobody's good enough for me. Whoa. You think you got them all, but forget about the eggs.
My problem is I'm a real user of women. I move in right away and stay until the money's gone.
Well, I'm a smart woman, but I make bad choices.
I was so really going to find
Okay, here's a set of house keys and my ATM card.
Oh, man. Those tool jokes imply that, like, Lionel Hudson's more than just an alcoholic and a bad lawyer. He is a terrible person who takes advantage of lonely women.
He's a sexaholic who needs sexahol to live.
I don't like implying that he has any sexual interest at all. Lionel Hutz is a law machine.
He uses women until the money's gone. In no point did he mention having sex with them. Yeah. He's hitting on her. He's definitely said something like, hey, we should have sex to Edna. But I think he would just see that as a tool to extract money.
He's a con artist. How many people in the classroom were also in the Streetcar Named Desire play?
Yeah, I
love when Lionel Hutz he's rarely plucked to play just a resident of Springfield. It's usually the lawyer character.
That's true. I think it really shows how filled Springfield is with characters that, like, it's 80% identifiable characters in the class. And also that I did not include all the sounds because it was 30 seconds of time they killed of Homer going,
I was surprised how long they stayed on that. I forgot how long. And actually, that was something that would sort of haunt me. So, I taught college writing at Kent State University for two years. I have too much college. I'm paying for it every day. This episode, I always think of it before I started teaching, like, how am I going to kill time today? Because it is a lot of time. And when you're teaching a class with a bunch of college freshmen, no one wants to say anything. No one wants to put themselves out there. No one really knows how college works. So it's like, I'm the star of the show for an hour and 15 minutes. I got to fill out this entire hour and 15 minutes. Oh, shit.
So you're telling me the guy who can do 5 seasons worth of 90-minute Simpsons shows is having a tough time filling air in a classroom.
Well,
I don't buy it, Bob.
Teaching people about argumentative writing is not as interesting as talking about The Simpsons. And none of my former students reached out to me. I taught like 300 students. I figure, well, at least one person would track me down. I was like, that's the idiot that taught me.
What if one of them like writes for Breitbart? And, like,
oh, boy.
One of my teachers in college, one of his final questions on a quiz is, what is my name? And I was like, I have no fucking clue. I'm not here because I want to be at all. Like, and I put down Dan the instructor, and he gave me extra points. I don't know why that he said that made me laugh. That's not my name, but Dan the instructor.
Comedy saved you again.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Hey, this is Hank Azaria. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time. I didn't know that was a thing.
Well, then their complaints continue to quite a revelation from Smithers' life that he had been married while with Burns and while he worked for Burns and with Lee. So look,
but is it a memory?
Look. This is a different. If this was a grandpa memory, if this was a Burns memory, that's one thing.
It's not trustworthy.
Smithers is a sober man who remembers lots of facts
in black and white with beautiful framing.
Oh, Carlos Baeza, come on, give it up.
I'm just gonna say he's such a Tennessee Williams fanboy that it's how it changed in his brain. And this is like the gayest Smithers has gotten to this point of just pulling out two different Tennessee Williams plays.
I was married once, but I just didn't know how to keep it together.
Come on, Waylon. Make love to me the way you used to.
No.
It's that horrible Mr. Burns, isn't it?
You leave Mr. Burns out of this!
Smithers! Smithers!
Great, Harry Shearer acting.
Yeah, both of them.
He exists in both Cat on a Hot Tin Roof and A Streetcar Named Desire. And I thought, even now, it's a bit self-indulgent to return to the streetcar well.
Yeah.
We just had the Homer a season ago going, Marge!
The only defense I have for that is that every producer who worked on Streetcar Named Marge is gone at this
That's
point.
That's true. You know, you're right, Henry. I'll give them that.
But they should still be like, do we really need to do another? Do we need to do a Stella Joke? Hasn't everybody, like, it's smart enough to do Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Like, that doesn't get parodied.
But we could
as much.
Make the joke gayer.
Well, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof is the gay one. Like, Streetcar Named Desire is not gay. It is very hetero and horrible.
Well, it is, and I don't mean to insult the audience, it is gay to like it.
Yes. Oh, yes. It is very gay to like
kidding.
It. But
what if you like Night of the Iguana?
Oh, I'm sorry,
you?
Bob. Sorry, also
no.
Gay. Watch that twice.
But what about the Glass Menagerie? That's fine.
Gayest ever.
Well, yeah, I mean...
It's like having sex with a man 1,000 times.
Well, in Glass Menagerie, Tom is clearly gay, and that's what he's drinking his problems away. But in Cat in a Hot Tin Roof, which, by the way, Tennessee Williams was a queer writer, most of his plays are about Southern people dealing with secrets and pain, and that is who Tennessee Williams was, too. And Cat in a Hot Tin Roof, especially, it was changed, it was lightened up some for the film, if you've ever seen the film, which Elizabeth Taylor has never looked more beautiful than is the sex pot Maggie the Cat in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And then Paul Newman plays her husband Brick, who is walking around with a broken leg, and he can't close the deal with her, and it's a very poisoned marriage. Well, meanwhile, Big Daddy and Big Mama come to town to celebrate his birthday, but Big Daddy, played by Burl Ives, and like
Silver.
If you only know Burl Ives from Silver Bells, watching that film is like, whoa, okay. But he's Big Daddy, and he secretly is suffering from cancer. But the issue for Waylon, both Waylon and Brick, is that
Brick.
They married their high school sweetheart, but they were actually, in Brick's case, he was in love with his football buddy, who's just like, yeah, it's my best football buddy. We love each other.
You never forget your first football buddy.
They both are in love with each other, but they won't have sex with each other because of their fears of reality. Or they clearly haven't had sex.
You gotta fuck your teammates. I cannot express that
so
enough.
So Liz Taylor played Maggie the Cat and Maggie Simpson.
She did.
Maggies.
So then Brick's football buddy, to prove what a man he is, he's going to have sex with Maggie. But he can't seal the deal. Mm. And when he fails...
I don't want to say how I read that, just looking down for a second. Sex with Maggie.
So when he can't seal the deal with Elizabeth Taylor, he then kills himself because he's like, I'm not a man. And so that's hanging over the entire play. So that's why Paul Newman's character wouldn't have sex with Elizabeth Taylor in there. And that's the... Meanwhile, the flame that Smithers is carrying is the one for Burns. And so really, the whole movie's awesome. I'd say, well, the play is even better because they, for Hays Code bullshit, they had to like talk around it when clearly he's obvious he's in love with it. Like Paul Newman, credit to Paul Newman, he fought against them sanitizing it and making it less gay, and he was not against playing a gay guy or playing a closet character, which, you know, you're a big time movie star like Paul Newman
in that
Newman,
era, of course.
You would have said like, I'd never want to play gay. Like there's a quote from Warren Beatty about in Bonnie and Clyde. He was a movie star. He did Bonnie and Clyde to be dangerous, and originally in the script for it, in Bonnie and Clyde, there is a three-way of two guys and a girl with him in it, and he told them he would not do that. He was like, look, I'm ready to get edgy in this, but I'm not going to have sex with a man.
I've got to play Dick Tracy in 20 years.
The explanation of that.
Paul Newman, disgustingly good dude, because I didn't get to say it last time, and I love talking about how Hanna-Barbera is being treated in comics. Snagglepuss is now cast in the Hanna-Barbera comic as Tennessee Williams, gay Southern playwright. It is fucking surreal.
I love that IP died so hard that they could do whatever they want with it.
And it's a period piece, too. Like, it's set in the 50s during, like, HUAC and everything.
I like this. I have to
read
this.
It's really interesting.
We get a scene with Hans Moleman, and in this scene, he's actually yellow. I notice in season 5, he goes back and forth from being brown and yellow.
Yeah, in the very next episode, he will be brown when he's lit on fire.
Yeah, that's true.
But he's into yellow here as the orange-eating class, and Homer's... I've based some of my improvisation on Homer's, like, it's some, like, this orange, this orange, this thing right in front of me. That Homer is so lost, he made no lesson plan, and everybody is just fed up with it. When the secrets come out, Mo getting to know the secret, it does add an extra dimension of Mo hitting on Marge later in the episode. That it's like, he celebrates the her secrets, and then will hit on her in, like, 10 minutes.
Has that happened before, the Mo Marge?
No.
It only happens in this episode.
Are you kidding?
I'm pretty sure, because Mo forgets her name later. Like, hey, Midge,
he
or
calls
whatever.
Her Midge in the hockey episode,
but
yes.
I think this was a thread they wanted to start. Maybe it got shut down by David Merkin, or maybe they thought, oh, it's only funny for this episode. But we would see it in King of the Hill with Bill Daughtry. So I have a feeling I have a feeling it is Greg Daniels who's putting this all together.
That is totally Bill
Daughtry.
Like,
the best friend who's in love with the main character's wife.
I love when they all just, on King of the Hill, they all just accept, like, yes, we know, Bill. You're all, Bill. You just got to calm it down, Bill.
Stop doing terrible King of the Hill impressions. Stop me now.
I mean, there's living with Peggy.
There's a lot of low moments for Bill Daughtry, but one of my favorite ones was when Peggy fell out of the plane and got the body cast. When it was taken off, Bill took the cast and put a picture of Peggy's face on it and just sort of hung out with it. Like, it's a very serial killer style maneuver.
It's a much darker joke on a show with almost no darkness.
Please fund our Patreon at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. We will cover King of the Hill. I want to so bad.
Yes. Homer finds a way to keep their attention.
Marge and I always talk things over in bed. Like the other night, we were fighting about money.
Ooh, a fight.
Trouble in paradise, huh?
I was telling Marge that we could save some money if she only dyed her hair once a month.
Huh? Marge dyes her hair?
Oh, yeah. She's been as gray as a mule since she was 17.
Ooh.
Come on, tell us more. Tell us about it.
I like Apu. They're like, did you know that?
Well.
It even entertained Skinner, who should have been like too much of a lame-o to be like, well, this is not polite in a classroom.
I think the class was just that boring. It was Homer doing orange improv for 40 minutes.
And when I originally taped it, I hit pause on it and I missed the end of the scene of the Krusty Burger return of him saying, like, I need closure.
Oh, right.
I never heard that line until rewatching it on DVD because I just messed up the recording.
He wanted that anecdote to be solved for him.
So I wonder if the cops ever, like, followed up and arrested Homer on that because they knew it was Homer.
He,
like,
committed two felonies that same day.
True.
Or that same week or whatever.
And, then when Homer... So then Marge gets humiliated at the Quickie Mart and...
Whatever do you mean, Apu?
Whatever do you mean? And I thought it was cute that Mo calls Apu Poo. Apu.
Yeah.
Apu. So Homer, this is where it really gets hard for me to watch if you read it as more than a cartoon of just like, if these are two adults in a relationship, Homer's ignorance is too far. Just like, you can't have forgotten. Like, and she, Marge makes it so clear of like, do not tell my secrets. And Homer's like, well, I didn't tell my secrets. When Homer says, I'm not telling my personal secrets in class, that shows that he knows he wouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And like, that's too far. And that he would still go back. It's like, it's just too mean for me. I don't know.
For reference, I told on a podcast that my girlfriend was jealous of a coworker who I was traveling with. And I didn't know, I think at all that would be a bad thing. And then all you wonderful listeners told her on her Twitter. Thank you so much. Tattletales.
Well, the difference between you and Homer in this situation is that, like, you offer up your life is like laid bare. Like,
there's really no difference between my private life and these podcasts.
Yeah, but I mean, Homer doesn't do that. So that Homer has that bounty for himself and not Marge's secrets, I think even more so is like, he's not a good guy. Homer's not. He's not somebody you root for.
He values the attention of the class more than Marge's, privacy.
Feelings and privacy.
No, immediate gratification more than a stable relationship that comes from issues of trust and boundaries.
Yeah.
So Homer tries to defend himself, and he ends up going through four movie references.
Very fast.
And I have all the clips. So let's hear the speech first.
You really wanted to hear what I had to say.
I'm happy about that, but I think you can be a good teacher and still respect our privacy.
Look, Marge, you don't know what it's like. I'm the one out there every day putting his ass on the line. And I'm not out of order. You're out of order. The whole freaking system is out of order. You want the truth? You want the truth? You can't handle the truth! Because when you reach over and put your hand into a pile of goo that was your best friend's face, you'll know what to do. Forget it, Marge! It's Chinatown!
Homer, don't ever tell them personal stuff about me again.
Yes, ma'am.
I deride your truth handling abilities.
I think it was the only way Homer knew to be assertive was to quote manly movie lines
yes.
from our most famous screaming actors.
out of context, just men trying to prove their worth. So let's go through these in order. You're out of order. Is from And Justice for All, which I've never seen. Al Pacino, 1979.
Phenomenal. Norman Jewison, it is a scathing indictment of the entire court system, and it holds up incredibly well.
I've
please,
never seen this.
Of all the movies to watch that we're going to talk about here, this is the one.
This performance is great.
Hey, that man is guilty. That man there, that man is a slime. He is a slime. If he's allowed to go free, then something really wrong is going on.
Mr. Kirkland, you are out of order.
You're out of order. You're out of order. The whole trial is out of order. They're out of order. That man.
We're good. Wow. What a good.
No,
I miss his hoo-ha.
Again, this was not typical for Al Pacino to be screamy in his films. That was not the thing he
Moments
floated
like
by
this
on.
This is what made him the screamy guy.
And that's
so
the
well.
End of the movie. It's very, very, very earned. He tries to do his best, right by justice. And it turns out it's impossible. So I'm just going to scream in court, mistrial the fuck out of this. It's a really, it's a great movie.
So, and of course, the next clip is You Can't Handle the Truth. I don't know if this movie is as well known now as it was then, but this is Jack Nicholson and Tom Cruise in A Few Good Men.
Colonel Jessup, did you order the Code Red?
You don't have to answer that question.
I'll answer the question. You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
The truth.
No truth.
Way till they get a load of the truth.
it's another great. Again, it's the end of the film, and it's Jack Nicholson admitting to the thing the entire trial is about because Tom Cruise pushes him in just the right way. Mm-hmm. What's that? Aaron Sorkin dialogue with Rob Reiner directing?
Rob Reiner. I'm Rob Reiner. You just got Reiner.
So the next clip is from Patton, last parodied pretty extensively in Bart the General, season one.
When you put your hand into a bunch of goo that a moment before was your best friend's face, you know what to do.
So that was
George Almigroin C. Scott.
And one of the best, unintentionally best performances in Dr. Strangelove, where they made him go wild on takes just for fun. Like, oh, we're going to keep those. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that are going in the movie. He's like, what?
I believe his character was Buck Turgidson.
Yes.
Like, he's so damn good in that. I love him. And yes, then Homer's last line.
It's a very quiet line in Chinatown, though.
Go home, Jake. I'm doing you a favor. Come on, Jake. Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown.
Titular line.
Yeah, so that just means you're fucked.
Yeah, it's set up early in the movie that when they worked in Chinatown, they're like, well, there's no fixing it like there, and there was really nothing the police could end up doing there. And yeah, it's just saying like you just can't do it. And that is boy, Chinatown. What a punch in the gut that movie is. Just like
it, horrible ending. Horrible in a great movie making way, but it's just like, oh, this is really tragic.
Yeah, you think you're seeing a film noir and then you find out like, no, there's absolutely no justice in the world. Like the bad people get away with it and the good people are shot in the head.
That's why it's a neo noir.
Mm-hmm. So how would I rank these? Justice for All, watch that first. Mm-hmm. Chinatown, Few Good Men. Patton, absolute last, maybe never. That is your dad's favorite film.
Yeah, it gave a lot of angry people boners. Well, because like Patton is a very interesting character who says cool stuff, but it is like a celebration of war.
You magnificent bastard, I read your book!
The only Polanski movies I watch are Before the Trouble Started, so I can still watch Rosemary's Baby and Chinatown safely. Okay.
Yes, yeah.
No love for The Ninth Gate?
I'll pass.
I think Ninth Gate now is even more problematic based on the other guy starring in it. Yeah, you know, Chinatown was the first movie he made after the murder of his wife.
Sharon Tate by the Manson Gang. Woof. Fun stuff.
All fun stories.
Look it up, kids.
So that line of quotes all made no sense to me except for You Can't Handle the Truth, because that got parodied on everything, so I knew that one.
And I saw the commercials, which they would always have that line in the commercials.
It did. I alluded to it in the previous episode, but as a little kid obsessed with movies, but my parents hated the idea of paying for HBO, all the sub-HBO movie channels, these were constantly run. I watched these sometimes twice a week, all of these films.
But I never saw these for the longest time, and so once I saw them, I was like, it was this clicking moment, kind of like watching... When I watched Citizen Kane for the first time, I was like, there's that Simpsons scene, there's that Simpsons scene. Mm-hmm. So it was, hearing those lines, being like, "Oh, okay, that's the this is the movie."
You'll get more out of Simpsons and Mystery Science Theater by watching more movies from this, the 1970s.
Yeah. Just get more cultured with watching all these classic films, and then you'll get more jokes too. It's a win-win. Homer promises her that it's going to happen, and at first he tries. He does try. I'll give Homer that. Him reading the definition of weeding instead of wedding is such a great joke.
And then he invites the class to his house, which actually happened a few... I mean, this is more of a grad school thing in my experience, but it's just like, oh, you're kind of students, but we're also peers in a way, so come to my house, we'll drink wine, and we'll have class there. And I think the implication was, maybe I'll fuck one of you.
Yeah, I mean, that happens in Animal House as well, of just like, I'm the fun teacher, just party here. And then eventually, at one point, he'll just corner one woman there, just like, hey, you want to fuck? The class comes to dinner. Here's the first sign of that, how bad this is.
And how's my little major leaguer? Catch any June bugs today?
Well, me and Milhouse took some mail from a mail truck and threw it down the sewer.
Son, I know you meant well, but that wasn't the right thing to do.
What the hell are you talking about? You're the one who double-dared us.
What are you, little...
Homer!
I'm out of here!
Me too.
Well, violently strangled in front of the class.
They don't seem to react that poorly to it. They're like,
And it's interesting how Bart's prank is so base and not ingenious in any way, but it's because it was Homer's idea. Yes, Bart's prank would be much more involved and have greater consequences for people, not just throwing mail in the sewer.
I like that Homer says, I know you thought that was the right thing to do. Like, that's the wrong reaction to that. Of just.
And I think we rarely hear Bart post-strangle struggling to talk. Like, I'm out of here. Yeah.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Lisa knows how screwed up this is already. She's like, I'm not. You are hurting the family that Homer doesn't understand. He likes being popular more with his class than the feelings of his family, or he's just completely blind to them, you know? And then it gets to be too far for Marge, and boy, I feel really bad for her in this part.
I want this to end now.
Hey, Homer, why don't you just nibble her elbow? That always melts her butter, right?
All right, okay. Everybody out.
Ooh, she's gonna have it.
Get out.
All right, we're breaking early tonight, class. For tomorrow, you should read pages 7 through 18 in Lisa's diary.
You two!
Huh?
Get out!
But I'm not in the class.
Is any of this going to be on the test? Because I wasn't paying attention.
What was that lab fee for?
That's good, too. It's weird that they end a break with Otto. Just like, they could end it on the drama, but instead, like, well, let's have Otto say a joke.
Was Homer kicked out of the house anytime after Homer's night out and before this?
Boy, I don't think so. Well, no. In Homer chooses to not come home after the Googleplex thing, which is how he ends up with Marlene.
But he wasn't kicked out.
No, he was not kicked out.
When
does
he stay at Barney's house?
I mean,
it might be in a flashback episode.
Yeah, he's living with Barney when Marge gets pregnant, and he calls Barney when he's in the jail next door to Barney, but he's not staying with Barney.
Thank you for unblurring my memory. Jesus Christ, Hank.
And Barney stays with him one night while, like, Marge leaves him for a solo vacation.
In Homer Alone.
Rancho Max. This is the first time she's thrown him out. And the movie tries to make it a more convincing case that it'll actually break up, but this is the closest I ever came to believing it.
I feel like when they come back to the third act, like, let me in, there are crickets out here.
But also, that finding out that Homer has been giving them Lisa's diary, too, it's like, what does that even have to do with marriage? Like, that's just another horrible invasion.
Hey, the class is, like, basically Homer's private reality show.
When you need material, trust me on this, I have 11 podcasts. You mine your life in the lives of others around you.
Write everything down about Chris.
Well, and when... Now, as an adult, hearing Mo say that melts Marge's butter, like, that disgusts me so much more.
It would humiliate me if, and you know, your girlfriends are all doing this, talking to their friends about what you like sexually. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he really likes a giant dildo in his ass. Oh. It's insane. I'd be so embarrassed if someone called it out.
Yes, it is. It is something you just kind of have to get over after a breakup of just like, well, this person knows all my sexual secrets and can tell everyone. Oh, well.
The secret is he likes his penis put in a warm, moist place.
I got rid of my unicorn costume after the last one. So
Then Homer's scared of the crickets. And okay, this line really hurt me because from my dad, I heard this exact thing a million times or similar stuff of like, Things were said. Mistakes were made. Let's end this madness and get on with our lives. That is classic abusive behavior of like a bad of a parent or a father in that kind of situation. Of just like, I did the bad thing, but let's just say we both did something bad. We're both at fault, and let's just forget it. And it's just a way of burying abusive behavior, just moving
this,
on from it.
This feels a lot like the Homer we saw in A Streetcar Named Marge. Like, just the intentionally cruel and selfish and passive-aggressive Homer who is not willing to admit any fault and only wants to hurt Marge.
I know. It actually reminds me.
She shouldn't have had secrets.
I saw another funny version of this in the Oh Hello on Broadway show, which, let me tell you, is so goddamn funny. John Mulaney and Nick Kroll doing Oh Hello on Broadway. And in it, John Mulaney's character, George St. Gieglin, is torturing his best friend Gil. Come on, get the fuck out of here, like, you're garbage. And then Gil like gets very hurt and is about to leave, and then John Mulaney's character is like, all right, look, come on, it's okay, like, we both made mistakes, like, let's just move on. It's just like, it's the same deal with Homer, and it's hard to like Homer when he does stuff like
that. Is one of the funniest things of the year, by the way. So
yes, Oh Hello on
Don't
Broadway
trust
on
Henry's
Netflix.
Reading it's
no, it's really funny. I just watched it again yesterday.
Yeah, I really want to watch that again. It was the most wall-to-wall laughter.
I saw it live.
Ooh, ooh. Who was your guest?
My guest was Aziz Ansari and his father.
Lucky dog.
I love
it. It was very funny. They made fun of him.
Leave me alone,
a lot.
Man.
They made fun of Aziz for saying, like, your dad's more famous than you now. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a better actor. Homer then saying, like, nah, I guess drop me a line. Like, he thinks he's too cool for her. Then the smash cut to him in the treehouse is so great.
Yeah, I mean, do his clothes get more tattered over the last act, or does he always have the rope belt? And
no, they discolor more tattered each time.
Yeah, because it's like an 80s fucking Atari shirt, like, at the very end. It's barely a shirt.
I think he has like 5 character models in this episode, just based on how disheveled he gets.
Yeah, and it's great how furry he gets too. Like, his and this is, again, we know, one day.
Revealed later, yes.
And I like you have the ridiculousness of Homer staring at them from the treehouse, while also Marge is having a fairly real conversation with the kids about, we might get a divorce, but both your parents love you. Of just like, that it's playing on those two levels at the same time is pretty funny. And the third act is really great, even more so when you know it's on the same day.
Yeah.
So here's the scene that I swear, like, mentally replace Bobby and Joseph from King of the Hill in the place of Bart and Milhouse.
Into the safety dome, Milbot. Affirmative, humanoid.
Don't mind me, boys. Just grubbing my undies.
Sorry, Bart. Your dad kind of blew the fantasy. I only like it when I pretend scared.
Keep up the roughhousing, son. Without a strong male presence in the house, you could turn sissy overnight. Oh, these stubborn grass stains.
So let's build Dotrieve then?
That is the kind of desperation Bill Dotrieve would have.
Yeah, I mean, Bill is fat and bald and wears a tank top that's white, so you can make all the connections there.
If that's not my favorite line of the show, it is my favorite still of the show. I realize I posted it on Instagram twice over the period of 5 years. Homer's head tilted back as he hoists his undies up to his chest as Bart's derpy-ass space helmet, no-mouth look. It is my favorite shot in the entire show, if not this whole season.
Go back to that.
Those are some pretty nice space toys Bart and Milhouse have. But
Reverend Lovejoy shows up next to give Marge advice. More bad Lovejoy advice.
This is the most they've sold out Lovejoy's character as a Bible lover.
Oh, good. Reverend Lovejoy will make Marge take me back. He has to push the sanctity of marriage, or his God will punish him.
Get a divorce.
Mm-hmm. But isn't that a sin?
Marge, just about everything is a sin. You ever sat down and read this thing? Technically, we're not allowed to go to the bathroom.
I love how glib he is about religion. Like, you ever read this thing?
I know. In later appearances, I think when Oakley and Weinstein take over, they do want Lovejoy to have been a believer, and that he would never sell out the Bible as useless, or that it's just, you can't live a Bible-filled life. They wouldn't go that far.
They built a good story about how he used to care, and he was worn down by just Springfield in general.
And I just love Homer's like, or else his God will punish him. Like, it's not Homer's God. He's talking about his God. And you know, a callback to the mail scene, that is, Homer's sleeping bag is a mail bag.
You're right.
So clearly he has stolen mail again. Like, he is fighting some mailman and stealing their mail.
I feel like there was a deleted scene that didn't even make it to color animation where that explains how he got that mail bag. It just seems, I mean, we have the backstory of him daring Bart to dump the mail in the sewer, but maybe there was another mail prank he was doing to cheer himself up. Who knows?
Worrying that Bart's going to become a sissy, that is definitely followed up on in Homer's phobia, for sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I didn't read too much maliciousness into it, because it's meant to punctuate the other joke, because his look.
Yes.
Well, I mean, Homer is not a guy you need to base your lifestyle after, or belief system after. But the next scene is, it totally reminds me of the scene from Life on the Fast Lane, where Marge is thinking about leaving Homer, and she's driving down the street, and everything she sees is telling her something to do.
Yes, my favorite sign is painful memories party supplies, which makes no sense. The other ones work as kind of like, okay, maybe that's a joke someone would name their place, but no party supply place would be called painful memories. That's why it's the great third joke.
It's a great meta sign joke. The joke was, we didn't write a joke.
Yeah, it's just like, Homer is trying to help her have happy memories.
I love you. Will you marry me, Mark? You mean I'm going to be a daddy? I hope we'll always be together.
And Homer was in the backseat with a mail tube or something.
Yeah, it was a bit manipulative of Homer, but he is this that desperate, and so he's trying to trick her, and it's another of those like FUTV conventions of, oh, you thought those voices were in her head, he's right behind her, and when she throws him out of the car, he lands right on his face first, just like wham.
It's a painful fall.
Good and fall by Baez and his team.
I think I wish I could think of an example off the top of my head, but I've seen this joke repeated since this episode several times, where they take the convention of someone remembering something, lines of something, and thinking about it, but it's the person's actually there. They're on the phone. They're in the room. They're behind the couch. I've seen this happen a lot. So maybe it was lateral thinking. Maybe people like this joke. Who knows?
It's a good joke. Many people have made fun of TV conventions. Simpsons would not be the only ones.
True.
But Lisa gets to meet their new mother.
Here, Dad. I brought you some nice.
Good news, Lisa. I don't need your mother anymore. I've created a replacement that's superior to her in almost every way.
Dad, that's just a plant.
Lisa, you will respect your new mother. Now give her a kiss. Kiss her! Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God! All right, let's get our story straight. She tripped, right?
It's odd how
Look, I brought you some nice pudding.
Now that joke will carry over into the next season. A wife/plant being murdered.
Oh, yes.
Oh, you're right. Oh, wow. Okay, so that's a big bowl of pudding. That's like an entire pudding mix of pudding. For
pudding! Two packages of pudding.
Yeah.
Yes, that is how much you'd get in a mixing bowl for making one thing of pudding. But Homer, I bet, routinely eats that much pudding.
Just a stray observation as I put my phone down forever because I'm done trying to find that shot. One, I can't believe that my only outlet for a long time of extrapolating in every episode of The Simpsons was Instagram. Jesus Christ, that's like all it was. 4 years ago. The other movie that had a big patent parody in it is Sesame Street. Oscar walks out and gives that same speech.
Yeah,
right,
quoting. Speech, but,
I really want one of our fans or somebody that's listening out there to do fan art of the shrub Marge from this episode and the fake Homer Marge creates in the B-sharp episode. They could be married as inanimate versions of Marge and Homer.
Free idea for fan art there, folks.
I see a t-shirt anymore. And I want the profits. It's the sweetest plum.
That it is so disturbing that Homer makes, again, a very Bill Dautrieve moment of making a fake Marge to live with him and then plotting to cover up her murder of just like that he thinks he killed her, like she tripped, right?
He's fallen into like full blown psychosis now.
Yes, which shows you how desperate and sad his situation is, and that I like that Homer's laziness of wanting Lisa to think of it for him. Like, can't you think of it? I'll give you $40. Okay, $30. And that Lisa is 8 years old. She can't solve her parents' marital problems.
It's a rough time to be the only like intelligent person in the room when your parents divorced. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And then I like that Homer refers to Marge as flesh mother.
Flesh mother. But
flesh mother used to give me this.
Mo decides to move in on Homer's turf.
Yes.
Clean house. No silverfish. Could have been very happy here. Homer.
Mo.
doing here?
I never touched a Homer. Homer, I swear I never touched her.
Here's your water, Mo.
I don't ask you for no water. She's lying, Homer. She's lying. She told me you were dead. That's the only reason I didn't do nothing.
Bye, Mo.
When Homer walks in, just like, hi, Mo, the camera is pointed up at him in a very sinister way. Yes. And the music underlines what Mo is thinking.
I love it. It's so Homer is unintentionally threatening. Like, Mo thinks Homer's about to beat him to death.
Yeah.
And Homer's like, hey, Mo, why are you here? He doesn't care. Like, Homer would never think Mo would have intentions for Marge. It would never even occur to him.
It's
so he just
established,
like,
in the opening, as he discovered, not only discovered he's slow, but it's okay to yell at Homer. Yes. Yeah. It's not a problem.
And I think Mo is wearing a 70s prom tux or something like that, with a boutonniere and everything.
I love the little touch of him cleaning the back of his shoe, or his shoe on the back of his leg. Like, was Mo just being manipulative or doing, like, a pickup artist type stuff of him saying, like, I'm really falling here, just waiting for her to offer him to come inside after being turned down? Or
I'm pretty sure it was manipulative. Yeah. I think it was part of the game, although Mo has low self-esteem and hates himself.
It gets to be more sad than...
Yeah.
Yeah, it could just be he really is like, I am about to cry, and she's like, fine, I'll give you water. Maybe it wasn't pickup artistry there.
But I mean, me reading the joke is... He's in Homer's class, and this is the only other woman he knows.
Perhaps, like, so.
This is what the teacher told me to do.
Yeah,
it worked for him.
Princess Cashmere is seen in the class. Maybe he struck out with her first.
That's true,
She doesn't say anything. Princess Cashmere doesn't talk anymore, but if they need... I feel like she'd leave the incidental character packet soon enough, because she is kind of ridiculous looking at this point.
She really is.
And Homer's only... Oh, yeah, no. I want to say Mo is all over the place for so many uses. Like, they could have changed out Mo for a character in, like, one of his scenes. First, he's a guy who's mad at Homer that he's getting beaten in poker. Then he's one of Homer's students.
He's teaching a class before that.
Oh, yeah. Then he's teaching a class. Then he's one of Homer's students. Then he's trying to hit on Marge. It's like, some other characters could have... Lenny could have been one of these people. Carl could have been one of these people.
Not Lenny.
And Homer's only idea is to give Marge flowers. That's all he could think of. Just posies. Mm-hmm. And it felt like a very fable-like moment, like out of a fable, where Homer's like, my tattered rags are caught in your coffee table. Like, that would have been in an Aesop's fable, or in, you know, a Grimm's fairy tale of the pauper leaving the princess's house.
It's very symbolic.
All right, so then comes the ending, which they definitely make clear this is a bad thing. Marge says it's a bad thing, but they kind of just settle for it.
What I think it is, it's like, it's kind of an eat your cake and have it too moment, in that we are invested in these characters, but this is very much an anti-sitcom, so this cannot be resolved in a way that's satisfying to the viewer. It has to be an uncomfortable, ugly ending, but that still restores the status quo.
Wait, that's it? I know now what I can offer you that no one else can. Complete and utter dependence.
Homer, that's not a good thing.
Are you kidding? It's a wondrous, marvelous thing. Marge, I need you more than anyone else on this entire planet could possibly ever need you. I need you to take care of me, to put up with me. And most of all, I need you to love me, because I love you.
But how do I know I can trust you?
Marge, look at me. We've been separated for a day, and I'm as dirty as a Frenchman. In another few hours, I'll be dead. I can't afford to lose your trust again.
I must admit, you really do make a gal feel needed.
Wait till my class hears about this. Kidding!
I cut out about 10 seconds of March thinking about it.
Yeah.
But so that speech, on the good side of it, I see it as Homer saying, I need you so bad, and I won't do these things again because this has taught me just how much I need you. And his I need you to love me is a strong emotional moment.
It's sweet, but also I need you to put up with me is the undercutting of that. But also, Homer is offering Marge nothing outside of to stop the bad behavior that he recently started. He's not like, I'll start doing this more. I'll start behaving in this way more. He's just like, I need you too much. I'm going to die if you don't take me in. I'm a stray dog of a human.
Yes. I mean, there's the implication that he will improve if she takes him back. Because he's like, Homer will die without her, so he'll do what she says. And that would work as an ending if there weren't 800 more episodes of the show after this one that show you Homer didn't change anything.
Hey, there's only 600 more episodes, Henry. Come on.
But at this point, it wasn't syndicated yet, so we wouldn't see another episode until September.
Yeah, it was a strong thing to go out on, but I just feel like his codependence as a relationship, and that Marge, like Homer's thing, not just is about dependence, but also pity. It's like, please pity me enough to keep me around, Marge. And maybe Marge is just, you know, like, I can't get
that
to
that 10% works on ladies. It does. I can't imagine another reason my girl is with me.
Oh,
other than that, I die without her.
The other alternative is Mo, Chris. So,
I mean, Marge,
I wish I had a dingy pot.
Marge doesn't have the pick of the litter in Springfield, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I feel this would work if Homer didn't act exactly the same.
Yeah.
And the other bit I don't like about... It's a very funny joke, but the other part I don't like about this is that Marge not only forgives him, but is, like, ready to do weird stuff in bed, like, do the things in bed that he likes, just as payback. It was like, you didn't earn this, Homer.
And I have a special present for you, but I'll give it to you later tonight.
Special present? I don't want to wait. I want it now. I want the children to see.
Oh, right. Later.
So, Marge, are you really happy? Really?
Hey, Mo.
Ah! It's the last joke of the season.
That's the end of the season.
I think it's just actually vanilla sex. Just like, you're going to get sex now that we made up. Makeup sex.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's married sex, so how exciting can it get? But that Lisa, I did at least, like, Lisa was me in that scene. Just like, just don't screw it up.
Yeah.
Like, you are very lucky. Don't screw it up. And then the Bart has fresh F's for him whenever he needs it.
I think that's just how thirsty Marge is, though. Yeah. One day without that homie doing
it has been clearly established that she enjoys sex with Homer. Like, they
slow thing fast.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Like,
imagine it, everybody.
What if we did it with the jacket on?
Can you swimming naked? That's next time.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think it is somewhat earned. Greg Daniels does a good job. It's something too. He really did well in The Office, which is, you know, that Jim and Pam will really not actually break up, but he built up storylines to go like, maybe they will, huh? Mm-hmm. And he's good at fooling you. You can see that kind of skill in here, too, I think.
Yeah, and grounding central characters with a whole lot of ridiculous characters in the periphery.
Yes, yeah.
That is an
true
Office hallmark.
That is true as well. But this, this was a good episode, I think, that got, again, to be more heft to it, thanks to the being a season finale.
Mm-hmm.
It is very down to earth compared to, say, flying into outer space. It's a very normal episode. But,
another Bias episode. Yeah, I really wish the next episode, which was delayed by the Northridge earthquake, which we'll talk about in the next episode of Talking Simpsons.
Whoa.
I really wish Bart of Darkness, the swimming pool episode, was the finale of the season, because it is tied into the summer.
Yeah.
And it was really weird to come into the fall with an episode about summer vacation getting a swimming pool. But as it stands, this is a fine episode, and I really love season 5.
Yeah, it's great.
I feel like it kept the energy up. There's only a few weaker episodes, like Bart's Inner Child is a weaker one, but the jokes still save it.
Yep. Oh, yeah. If looking back on season 5, broadcast season 5, we're now at the end of production season 5, blah, blah, blah. Broadcast season 5, I liked it more than season 4. Like,
I do, too.
You had the two great holdovers from production season 4, Cape Fear and
Homer's Quartet.
Homer's Barbershop Quartet, and then David Merkin and his team just go, like, straight at it. They are so fast and so nimble and coming up with, and there's no episodes as weak as the front, or there's not a goddamn clip show in this either.
Yeah.
So
that'll be next year, and it's so bad. And we're doing it. We're doing it.
I think we're gonna have a pretty good time for the next year, because every season will, at least revisiting them in order, will feel.
I really don't like thinking of it like that, Chris, because people say in nice ways, like, what are you gonna do in 2 years? We're gonna keep doing this because we like the Simpsons.
I swear I might not have had more fun than revisiting the first and second seasons with you guys. The seasons you don't. The DVDs you don't throw in very often.
And I don't feel that way in season 12, season 13.
Yeah, me
I
too.
Still feel that way. So don't, please, folks, don't think like, well, when they get to season 9, they're just.
And I'm talking season 11. That's what I'm referring to, the seasons I don't watch that much.
Yeah, me too.
11.
But that is still 3 years away, folks, anyway. So we're deep. We're going to be living in Simpsons land for a long time to come.
I'm looking forward to every second of it. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts, a classic gaming podcast, every Monday Wednesday and occasionally a bonus episode on Friday, you will find our episodes. Go to Retronauts.com or look for Retronauts in your podcast device. If you've ever played a video game, there will be at least one topic you will want to listen to, and I guarantee you will want to listen to more than one. Not a guarantee.
I was on a recent episode about canceled games.
That's right, and that won the world over. You know what? We recorded that episode in the beginning of March. We talked about Star Fox 2 as an unreleased game.
Wow.
The day,
oh, my God.
The day that Retronauts launched was the day Nintendo announced Star
the
Fox
California
2.
California Raisins. Oh, what
no,
were you
no.
saying?
The day Nintendo announced Star Fox 2 would be released with the SNES Classic.
Wow.
Man, what timing. Boy. Wow.
And no collusion there, folks. and the California Raisins still remain obsolete. No one cares.
And I'm HENERYGE on Twitter, and I want to ask you listeners a question. Did you hear this without ads? Did you hear this a week early? If not, would you like to? Well, you can do that if you will become a patron at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. Head over there and you can support us for just $5 a month and get access to tons of stuff, including every episode a week early and exclusive interviews, a community podcast, the second episode of Talking Critic, and all future episodes of Talking Critic, and much, much more.
And that's not even the most exciting thing. You guys get the season wrap-up.
That's right.
We're gonna, boy.
The season 5 wrap-up is coming, and it's going to be king-sized, Homer-sized.
And we're doing two of them, right?
Yes, at least two.
Season 5 wrap-up exclusive for patrons, and I believe patrons, not unlike Laser Time patrons, will just, you guys did a Simpsons movie commentary.
Yes.
A full-length Simpsons movie commentary, because it'll be a while till we talk about it, maybe.
But yes, we are at the end of Season 5, so the season wrap-up is coming up, and we're not just going to do our going through the news and stuff, but as Bob has teased many times,
we are going to go through every deleted scene, contextualize them, analyze them, see if they're funny, and try to talk about would this have been a classic Simpsons line or scene if it had stayed in the episode. And I think a lot of them would have been. And I'm going to confuse a lot of people in the future by quoting deleted scenes and fucking with their minds like, that never happened. No, Skinner did say this.
I like that donut record scene. I would have kept that one.
I love Skinner in the homeless shelter talking about his mom having a date. One of my favorite scenes.
8 o'clock. So yeah, patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons, Chris.
Laser Time, baby. It's the dumb little show that started this whole dumb little studio, by the way, which has never been messier, and I apologize.
Oh, it's fine, Chris.
But we're in the middle of a full day of recording. We have a ton of other Laser Time episodes that you would be interested in. Controversial Songs is one of my favorite recent editions of you. We talked about Spider-Man at this point, Wonder Woman, and female superheroes. Really fun episode so far. And the episode I should have just ended the show on, all about pop culture farts, which includes The Simpsons, sadly. But anyway, check that out. We are supported by Patreon as well, patreon.com/lasertime. It launched 30-20-10, the weekly look back 30-20-10 years ago in pop culture history, video game apocalypse, and a weekly exclusive bonus show, tentatively called Bonus Time, for 105 episodes in a row. and an exclusive. I'm done.
Cool. Thank you so much for listening, folks. We'll be back next week with the first episode of Season 6, Bart of Darkness. We'll see you then.
Wow. Infotainment.